Coming up on Weekend America.
As we speak, flood victims are hoping their sandbags hold.
We just spin the roping around the top, cinch it down really tight, spin it around three or four times, and then put a nice tight square knot or a couple of fast granny knots in there.
This hour, we'll talk to those battling the Mississippi. I'm Desiree Cooper.
And I'm Bill Radke. In Afghanistan, not everyone who gets out of the military leaves war behind.
Everybody's ex-military, and people find it hard to adapt to civilian life. And so this is sort of an in-between place.
We'll spend the weekend with private workers on the front. And later, here's one way to get into a pickle on your honeymoon.
After the wedding, my friend and his wife drove out to the beach for their honeymoon night. And lo and behold, when they got to the hotel, Sally was in the bed wearing lingerie waiting for them.
Wacky wedding stories on Weekend America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to the weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. This hour, we're going to continue our series Weekend Pass, where we meet Americans fighting abroad and find out how they spend their downtime. Today, our guests are not military, they're private contractors, and they're finding that the rules of engagement in Afghanistan are changing. On the lighter side, if you are a cat owner, you've probably been putting this off, but you really should do it eventually. We'll help you do it later this hour. So do you have any advice for doing it? For washing a cat?
After you peel them from your body, head, leg, arm, then you need the gloves to actually hold them into the water. Wear gloves.
I don't think you're supposed to get cats wet, are you? I mean, it's like dry clean clothing.
I just read about this today. If you stick a part of an old screen in the sink, when you're washing it, the cats will dig its claws into that instead of digging its claws into you.
It's not like lather, rinse, repeat. You'll be lucky to get in there and not lose an eye.
You got to contain them. They're like balls of teeth, nails, and fury.
Okay, I'm convinced. I'd rather wash a porcupine.
Those voices came from St. Paul, New York, Ann Arbor, San Francisco, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Bothell, Washington.
This is Weekend America, the show about what's happening this weekend. And this weekend, all eyes are on Old Man River. On Friday, the National Weather Service reduced its predictions about how high the Mississippi is actually going to rise. And that's good news on the back of some bad news. The river's cresting lower than predicted because several levees broke in Illinois this week. And so instead of hurtling south, the river water is washing over farmland as we speak. Still, communities like Clarksville, Missouri, population 500, are breathing easier this morning. Bud Garrison lives in Clarksville. He has a pottery shop next to the river. Bud, where are you right now?
Right now I'm sitting in our pottery shop on Front Street in Clarksville. We're about normally about 100 feet from the river. This morning we're probably about 15 feet from the river. We're sitting behind a sandbag levee that has been constructed down Front Street right in front of our shop.
Did you help construct that levee?
Yeah, actually there were about a dozen of us a week ago Sunday that started the levee, and the effort has grown significantly since then. We now have hundreds and hundreds of volunteers as well as National Guard and the prisoners from local or from Missouri State Penitentiaries helping us.
And I understand that the Illinois National Guard delivered something like 25,000 filled sandbags just yesterday. Where were you when that happened?
Yeah, I was here at the shop, but we've been filling sandbags for the first week by hand here. So that was certainly a welcome addition to our stockpile.
What's the mood in the town like now?
It's very optimistic, but I'll tell you that it's been upbeat and optimistic throughout. Of course, in the first three or four days before we knew we were going to have these sorts of resources helping us, you know, we were all anxious and nervous, but the town people really never lost their spirit.
I find that amazing. If I thought that the river was going to overflow, I don't know what I'd be grabbing first. Your shop is right there on the water, basically. What were you thinking?
We couldn't afford to lose all of our kilns and inventory and so forth. So the first day or two, we just went about, you know, getting the shops evacuated and getting basements and the houses along Front Street evacuated. You don't really have time to think much about the disaster. You just get into gear.
You just jump in and pitch in, huh?
Right.
What's your weekend going to be like?
For us right now, we're hoping for some downtime today and tomorrow, and we got some rest finally. We got to sleep through the night last night for the first time. Our home is located about a half a block from here, and we're very fortunate that our house is up on about a 5-foot stone foundation. So we have about 3 or 4 feet of water in the basement that we're continuing to pump, but our house is safe, and some of our neighbors are not, you know, quite as fortunate, but just hope that when the river crests again tomorrow night, that it's not, you know, any worse than it was yesterday when it crested.
Well, I hope you get that much deserved downtime and some sunshine.
Thank you.
Bud Garrison talking to us from his pottery shop in Clarksville, Missouri.
This is the show about what's happening in America this weekend, and sometimes it ain't pretty. We're starting a new series today called Weekend Underground, where we roll the weekend over and look at its underside, the unseemly, the illicit, all done in good taste, of course. We begin today with the world of illegal substances. Congress is now debating the reauthorization of the Byrne Justice Assistance Grant Program. This is a federal program that funds the nation's drug task forces. We're about to meet a man who used to be a part of that drug enforcement, but he has chosen now to work against it. His views and his actions are very controversial. Reporter Michael May wanted to know what drove this man's conversion from the side of the law to the side of the outlaw.
Former Texas narcotics officer Barry Cooper leans close to the window of a helicopter flying just outside Dallas. He spots the signs of a hidden marijuana field below, a trail leading from a water source to a clearing in the woods. He touches down, follows the trail through a hole cut in a fence, and finds what he's looking for.
This is a little female plant here. It's already budding out, and I'm sure there will be more.
This scene is part of Cooper's Never Get Busted Again DVD series. In this episode, he lets marijuana growers know how to plant their crops so they won't be spotted from the air.
Don't grow your pot in rows. It's much safer to plant 4 or 5 plants in one area. Go 50 yards, plant 4 or 5 more plants where it looks natural. Remember, the more natural you can keep everything, the safer you're going to be.
Cooper's long, strange trip from enforcer to enabler began when he joined a small East Texas police department when he was just 21 years old.
I thought I had the best job in the world. I was the young, hotshot narcotics cop. It was thrilling for a young man to be thrust into that game.
A video from a mounted police car camera shows what Cooper was like in those days. Short hair, mustache, a cocky expression on his face as he stares down the driver he stopped.
Okay, where's the marijuana at?
I ain't got none.
Now, how, these two ladies in here been smoking weed too?
No.
Don't lie to me.
I ain't lying to you.
Their eyes are awful damn red.
Eventually, he was recruited by a drug task force in far west Texas. In an attempt to increase arrests, he used questionable tactics. And he wasn't the only one. The Texas Drug Task Force has caused so many scandals that the state pulled their funding in 2006. Cooper admits he would pull over drivers based on the color of their skin. He would pretend his dog smelled drugs so he could search a car. He abused the power that came with his position.
Manipulating harmless, nonviolent citizens with such fear that they would snitch their own brother off to keep from losing their family, their job, and going to prison. That's not right. That's bad.
As Cooper got older, he started to question what he was doing. First of all, he noticed that no matter how many arrests he made, the number of people using and selling drugs never seemed to change. And then he got curious about the people he was arresting, the The pot smokers in particular never seemed to pose much of a threat to society.
And I wondered what the big deal was, because there were so many people smoking pot, I was catching everybody.
Cooper kept his views to himself, but then he arrested a city council member and the mayor's son for drugs. After the political fallout, his superiors made it clear that his days as a cop were numbered. But before he left, Cooper wanted to try the weed he'd spent a decade stamping out.
So I pinched some off of the what I used to train my drug dogs with. And my wife at that time, and we smoked it. And I thought it was the neatest thing since sliced bread. So after that, the last 3 months of my career, I didn't make any marijuana arrests.
After Cooper left the force, he became the target of questionable arrests.
And I saw that the courts were doing nothing to protect our Fourth Amendment rights against these unreasonable searches and arrests.
So Cooper decided to do something. He started producing his DVDs. His first one, Never Get Busted Again, Traffic Stops, offers tips like, always carry a cat in the car. It confuses the dogs. Or, transport drugs in the rain, because not even cops like to get wet. Cooper saw this as a way of giving the victims of the drug war a way to fight back.
You're teaching drug thugs teaching the user, and it's not a protest. You're making money. You're exploiting.
That's Cooper on Fox News. Commentators have accused him of everything from encouraging teenagers to hide their drug use to aiding and abetting terrorists.
Drugs have been linked to terrorist financing. Two drugs have killed hundreds of millions of people.
That's not
how is
that's
this guy
a lie.
No different than
that's propaganda.
Bomb
that is
for
propaganda. That Fox
Cooper's extreme methods have even alienated him from mainstream pro-marijuana advocates. But he's not giving up. He's put out a call on his website to get in touch with anyone he'd put in jail. A man he'd arrested for possession at a traffic stop responded. Cooper invited him out to the house, asked for his forgiveness, and then they got stoned together.
Which I thought was neat. Yeah, and it was bittersweet. It was bittersweet because here I am sitting in front of a man that had no reason to forgive me the harm I caused on him, and he's forgiving me. Man, that feels good, but it hurts too at the same time.
Cooper's now traveling to courtrooms across the country, using his expertise to testify against cops who have trained their dogs to do false alerts. And he's running for Congress as a libertarian in his deeply conservative East Texas district. He wants to reform the criminal justice system, and he's funding his campaign by using the money from his DVD sales. In Big Sandy, Texas, I'm Michael May for Weekend America.
Barry Cooper will be hanging out with friends this weekend at a lake house in East Texas. At our website, you can see before and after photos and video of Barry, from drug agent to drug advocate. We'd also like to hear what you think about his story and about these issues. Come to our website at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week. And by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, the latest cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat.
Private security contractors in Kabul let down their guards on the weekends. Coming up on Weekend America.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your weekend with us. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. Today we bring you another story in our series about how military personnel spend their time off. The series is called Weekend Pass. But this week our story doesn't involve enlisted soldiers, but some of the 30,000 private security contractors who are working in Afghanistan to support the U.S.-led offensive. The Afghan police have started cracking down on some of the contractors there, arresting them for carrying their guns in public, for example. That's part of the growing hostility between the Afghanistan government and the private security companies. Meanwhile, American aid workers and even U.S. embassy personnel are depending on these private guards for their safety. With tensions escalating, how do the private contractors spend their time off? Well, we sent reporter Gregory Warner to find out. A warning. At the beginning of this piece, you'll hear an epithet used several times against a minority group. Here's the story.
You might not think of Kabul, Afghanistan, as a party town. But until recently, for some people, it was like a free-for-all.
We hired midgets. We got a swimming pool full of beer and jelly.
I'm sorry, you hired midgets?
Yeah, we hired Afghan midgets. You know, we spoke to, does anyone know where we can hire midgets? $50 for the night.
That's Ben West, a former British paratrooper. When I met him, he'd been doing private security in Afghanistan for the last 3 years.
And it was a bit of a surprise for everybody. They answered the gate, and there's these two midgets there, and escorting, you know, down up and down the stairs to where the parties were at.
Now, was that something you did with parties back home, that you ordered midgets?
No, you can get anything in Kabul. Absolutely anything you want, you can get here.
For a while, it seemed nothing could stop the party, until a few months ago, back in January, a few days after Ben's 25th birthday, insurgents stormed the only luxury hotel in Kabul.
They just went into the gym and started shooting. 10 minutes later, my girlfriend would have been in the gym on the treadmill. You know what I mean? And that really took the wind out of everybody's sails.
So these days, if you want to find Ben on his off hours, he's probably here, running a tattoo parlor out of his bedroom. Maybe Ben's way of having the adventurous life, but indoors.
I'm just going to crank it up for you, mate, just to wake you up, yeah?
Where Ben lives looks like a mansion turned into a college dorm. The house is huge, with marble floors and green-tiled bathrooms. But Ben's bedroom is just a bed in a corner, some shelves stacked with whey protein. Ben is ripped, by the way.
How long has it been since your last one, mate?
Tat?
Yeah.
7 years or so.
7 years, all right.
Ben is Kabul's only tattoo artist. His clients include expats and occasionally Afghans.
I don't know. Maybe this is a midlife crisis. Could be.
Today, his client is another security contractor, an American named Steve. Both of them do jobs here that U.S. soldiers might have once done. Steve guards the U.S. embassy and some visiting lawyers. Ben trains Afghan police to recognize IEDs, homemade bombs. The tattoo that Steve's getting combines his past and his present. It's a marine sword with the Afghan word for warrior written over it.
Do you miss being a warrior? I am now. I protect people every day. I'm looking at every person in the crowd and just waiting for something to go boom.
Steve always dreamed of being a marine, and he loved it. Civilian life he was less ready for. 2 decades after leaving the military, he wasn't doing well, racked by debts, working a nothing job in Dallas. And then he flipped on the radio.
Dragged through the streets of Fallujah. Their bodies hanged after they were ambushed.
I heard the news story about the Blackwater guys that got killed in 2004 in Iraq.
You might remember that attack. 4 contractors were killed in Fallujah. The images of charred bodies broadcast internationally. It was a turning point for U.S. public opinion about the war. For Steve, it was also a turning point in his career.
Saying, Blackwater, what's this? What's this all about?
So you read about the Blackwater guys being dragged through the streets, and that's what made you want to apply?
Well, yeah, I was completely unaware of that job market.
So Steve applied for the job. Here's Ben, the tattooist.
Everybody's ex-military, and people find it hard to adapt to civilian life. And so this is sort of an in-between place.
Ben also tried to go straight. After he left the paratroopers, he took a job as a plumber.
I think one day he even told somebody, oh, I'm a plumber. And the conversation ended there. And when you've come from being in the military or whatever, or just being away, and you're used to people, you know, showing respect for you and things like this, just to be like nothing. The only reason people want to speak to you is because they want something.
So Ben and Steve ended up in Afghanistan, the in-between place.
Whatever. 9mm, but it holds a 30-round mag.
Now Ben makes more money than being a plumber and a paratrooper combined.
All the weapons are stashed away.
So wait a second,
You have the secret. You have a secret trap door in your bed.
That's right. It's got to be done, just in case the police kick the doors down or whatever. It's got
to
be done.
The bed come like that?
See, as a military man in Iraq, Ben tells me, he never had to talk to locals, except through a translator, and except when they were doing what he ordered them to do. Now he feels like he actually lives in Kabul. He has to speak more Dari, the local language. And tensions between private contractors and the Afghan government have increased.
The police stop you all the time. They don't speak a word of English. You know, I speak more Dari now than I do any other language, just purely because I've been dropped into the middle of it.
It's this freedom to live among the locals, which the military doesn't prepare you for, Ben says. He can hire little people for parties, but it also means if his gun breaks, he has to find an Afghan gunsmith to fix it. There's none of that distance that the military usually provides.
There is definitely guys who probably should have stayed in the military as well. When you go to the mercenary side of things, they can't let the military side of things go. And they're just rude to people. And it gives us a bad name. You know, the first thing they can think of is not always the thing that will help them get through something.
So what you're saying is that it's easier when you're a soldier to deal with everybody kind of rudely and brusquely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, that actually helps you do your job.
...9:30 already, we just finished tattooing or whatever. It's been a long week. Friday's the only day off. One day weekends suck. But it makes for some interesting Thursday nights.
Tonight's Thursday, the day before the Muslim holy day. Last year, Ben would have stayed out all night at the bars. Now that's off limits. His boss says it's not worth a run-in with Afghan police. So we're stuck going to a bar on the military base, NATO headquarters. We pass a barbed wire gate, and the sounds of karaoke get louder. The on-base bar is called Tora Bora. Hundreds of men and a few women stand around in camouflage. Ben and his friends stand apart, in t-shirts and jeans. The soldiers don't talk to us.
Yeah, military get told not to talk to us, because obviously it affects morale inside the units and things like that.
It's bad for morale if they found out his salary, he says. And the rest of the night will go like any other for young men in a small town. We'll drink beers, talk about girls. Ben's friend will get a call about a party in a private house, so we'll pile into the car with bottles of Jack Daniels stashed beneath our seats. We'll drive off passing almost nobody on the street. Either they're not allowed or they can't afford to be. For Weekend America, I'm Gregory Warner in Kabul, Afghanistan.
To hear more stories in our Weekend Pass series about what our military personnel do on their downtime, you can go to our website at weekendamerica.org. Next month, we'll hear from soldiers stationed at a controversial U.S. base in Japan.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Executive MPA Program.
Attention June brides, in your rush to the altar, don't forget to pay the videographer. You're going to need something to laugh at later. Wacky wedding stories, coming up on Weekend America.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper. You could make a fine mixtape just by using the segment of our show called Weekend Soundtrack. Listeners have been sharing with you their stories of The Shins, Ride, Jeff Beck, Nina Simone, Jack Johnson, all in response to the question, what is the soundtrack to your weekend and why? Roxanne Cronin listens to our show in St. Louis, Missouri on KWMU. Her weekend soundtrack describes the first meeting of two heartbreak veterans, John Hiatt's Icy Blue Heart.
She came on to him like a slow-moving cold front. His beer was warmer than the look in her eye. She sat on a stool and he said, what do you want? And she said, give me a love that don't freeze up inside.
What a great opening meeting scene. It's like a Bogart movie.
Yeah. It is.
Who are these people, Roxanne?
I've always had this image of, you know, the gentleman being this work with his hands kind of a guy out in the elements, you know, iron worker, carpenter kind of guy. And she's a little past her prime, but, you know, obviously a very beautiful woman. And he might not be very educated, but he's very wise.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell me why Icy Blue Heart is the soundtrack to your weekend?
I put this CD in actually when I clean, and I know it doesn't sound like that's a rip-roaring kind of a weekend, but I'm a very busy person, and so when I do get the time to get in my apartment, be in my own space, unpile the piles that have gathered up, I indulge in this song and in the fantasy.
Should I stop to turn what's been frozen for you?
I get to think about what would it be like if having had love and lost love, if there was somebody that, you know, could sort of connect with me that way again.
Yeah, he can tell she's got trouble defrosting.
Right, exactly.
Why our lips could turn blue just shooting the breeze. Under the frost, well, he thought he detected a warm blush of red and a touch of her knee.
So you clean to this song?
I'm probably standing there with my eyes closed, swaying back and forth, with, you know, a dust mop in my hand. And I probably sing the entire song.
I'm curious about your future, Roxanne. What's it going to take for someone to outlast that cold front?
The man in this song, it's almost like he understands this woman's bitterness or her heartbreak or whatever it is. And I think so many people I've met, their glass is completely and totally full, and oh, it's going to be wonderful. And I guess I just think maybe somebody who understands why I don't always see it that way.
Your icy blue heart. Should I stop to turn what's been frozen for you into a river of tears?
Roxanne, thanks a lot for sharing your weekend soundtrack.
Well, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Her weekend soundtrack was Icy Blue Heart by John Hiatt. What about you? Tell us the soundtrack to your weekend and why at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. On this first weekend of summer, wedding season is in full swing, especially in California, where gay couples can now join in wedded bliss. Weddings are wonderful moments. They're drenched in expectation, laughter, tears. We're going to focus on the laughter part. We asked you for your crazy wedding stories, and you anteed up. Marty Gordon of Seattle, Washington, remembers a time when he brought a special guest from his past to his friend's wedding.
Sally was very popular in school. She was part of the homecoming court. She was in the homecoming parade. Years later, when my friend Brian got married, I thought it would be very special if I could find Sally and have her come to the wedding. So I searched around and I found Sally. She showed up early and we got her positioned in the second row, and it was great. She sat there during the whole ceremony. After the wedding, when Brian and his new bride got to the hotel room, they found Sally in the bed wearing nothing but lingerie, and his new bride was upset, and she told Brian to get Sally out of there immediately. And so I don't know how he did it, but he did. I guess I should tell you now that Sally wasn't a real girl. She was a mannequin.
Hi, this is Diana Abu-Jabbar. I'm from Miami, Florida. We didn't have a lot of money, and we knew we wanted to get married in Key West. We'd looked at the Hemingway House, and then we looked at the pier at the Casa Marina. And that seemed like one of the most beautiful and really idyllic settings for a wedding. And they told us that it would cost $1,000 to reserve the pier. But they added that if we were willing to take the chance, something bumping us, that they would let us go ahead and use the pier on the day of our wedding without a reservation for free. So we did not reserve it. We were all assembled. Everyone was ready. And we walked down the aisle and we assembled in front of the minister. She got to say something like, "Welcome everyone to Diana and Scotty's wedding." And suddenly all we could hear was Bananarama's "Cruel Summer" blaring out over our wedding party. MTV was out there. There were TV cameras and some kind of a big sign that said something about a summer beach house. Essentially, no one could hear a single thing that anyone was saying at all, including our wedding vows.
There's nothing like sending off newlyweds with a little cruel summer. For Brooke Williams, her problems began before the wedding. Her ceremony was going to be in Boothe Bay Harbor, Maine, during the height of tourist season. To remain calm and organized, Brooke turned to Martha Stewart's wedding planner guide for a little help. But Brooke had no idea how big a role Martha would eventually play on her special day.
During the summer, weddings run like salmon at Our Lady Queen of Peace, a picturesque Catholic church overlooking the harbor. When we booked our date a year in advance, just like Martha advised, Father Parent informed us we were lucky to get the last Saturday. 6 months before the wedding, everything was in place, and I was leisurely constructing napkin ring holders out of mussel shells with my glue gun. Then the florist called. "Some bigwig is getting married in Boothe Bay the same day as you." Just to be safe, we rushed to the church to confirm our 2 p.m. service. "I don't know what you're talking about," said Father Parent. "Martha Stewart's editor is getting married at 2 p.m., he cooed, his voice breathy with anticipation. This was crazy. I had followed all of Martha's golden rules. Contracts, confirmation, and constant communication. And look where that got me. How was I supposed to defend myself against the matriarch of weddings herself? While I crumpled like a soiled cocktail napkin, my fiancé Christopher suited up and did what all men do in crisis. He called his mommy. "You tell Father that I already sent out the invitations," she barked. "You want me to lie to a priest?" Christopher asked. "You heard me," snapped my future mother-in-law, who still had Father Parent on speed dial from last summer when he married Christopher's sister. "Nobody sends their invitations out in February," Father Parent protested, until Christopher produced his cell phone. "Shall I call my mother?" "That won't be necessary," he said, pushing the phone away as if Satan himself was on the line. Victory is sweet indeed. One of the highlights of my wedding day was watching the fireworks display Martha Stewart's editor gave herself across the harbor. As red, white, and blue bursts lit up the sky, I realized with glee that from our hilltop reception, my guests had the better view.
You'll be happy to know that Diana and Scott are legally married, even though they couldn't hear a word of their vows.
Des, my story is not crazy wacky, but here's one. I was officiating my little sister's wedding. Uh-huh. I got certified on the internet, very easy to do. Okay. So I'm going through the service, and I look into the pews where the guests are standing, and my wife is gesticulating wildly with her hands around her waist. I had forgotten to invite people to sit down, and I never picked up on it. It just went on and on, and eventually my wife sat and the other guests gratefully joined her. That was it.
I bet you never thought that officiating could really be that complicated.
Yeah, I've got an appreciation. You know, when you hire a real wedding officiant, you're not just getting her credentials and her homily. You are getting a veteran entertainer, toastmaster, facilitator, who actually has the experience to make everybody comfortable in ways that you're never supposed to notice.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that now. This is Weekend America. Okay, this next story is about a weekend activity you do not want to do. Granted, nobody wants to. But this is allergy season, and we cannot just blame the trees and the weeds. The fact is, there is an animal who is part of the problem and does not want to be part of the solution. Reporter Sally Herships introduces us to two men who are spending the weekend doing what has to be done.
Oh, yeah. Okay, dog, take my shoe. Come on. It's okay. Let go. Let go. Let go.
How to give a cat a bath.
So wait a second here. You're about to get into the shower fully dressed with a cat.
Oh, yeah. The key is not to leave any part of your skin exposed.
Washing your cat is easy, just like washing your own hair. But remember, don't tell the cat what you have planned.
I have a feeling she knows.
I think she's hiding in the
closet. She's hiding in the closet. Yeah, that sounds like karma.
Peter and Jonathan will be washing their cats today. Let's listen and see how they do.
You plus water, you know, one of you is going to get hurt. And it's usually not the water.
Peter is careful. Is Jonathan careful too?
The website I read said to wear long sleeve shirts and old clothes because the cat can probably get pretty angry. And it also says to clip the cat's claws before you wash her, which I haven't done.
And you're also not wearing a long sleeve shirt.
No, I'm not. I don't have actually all my clothes are at my girlfriend's place.
Baths can be humiliating for cats. In order to prevent loss of self-esteem, try positive reinforcement.
Oh, shush. No, you don't. You're making a bigger deal out of this than it is. I really believe that.
We all have to do things that we don't like sometimes. We all have to get our fur wet, and the kitty is no exception. Welcome to life, cat.
Even with reassurance, bath time may still be uncomfortable for your kitty. He or she may try to prevent the bath. Therefore, it's important not to underestimate your cat. Peter uses the full immersion shower method.
You have to close the cat in. There's no... She's a cat. So, it's okay.
Jonathan uses the bathtub method.
Right now, I'm pouring water on her fur. I'm just getting her a little bit wet. She's really, really intent on making this not happen. There we go. She really doesn't want to be here. That didn't work so well.
Jonathan changes his strategy and decides to use the much safer sink method.
Yeah, there you go.
Once you've figured out where your cat is most comfortable, you'll want to wash them thoroughly. Make sure you have everything you need ahead of time. Peter is prepared.
It's not even so much
soap or shampoo or anything like that. It's really the water and working the water into her fur to get to like knead out the dander.
Is Jonathan prepared too?
It's a new, brand new bottle of shampoo, so I may have to unseal it. I'm trying to hold my cat in the sink while I'm taking the seal off the shampoo bottle. We're almost done, kitty. Almost done. Your fur's gonna be nice, clean, and shiny.
Soon your cat will be dirt-free and comfy.
But you see, she's not fighting. She's not really being... terribly...
She's not happy.
I'm almost as wet as kitty. There we go. Now we're gonna get a towel. It's okay, see, that wasn't so bad. I hope I got all that shampoo out.
Wow, that could have gone so, so much worse than it did.
You know, can't they make a video just like that about how to give a toddler a bath? I think that would be good.
You could have used that?
I could have used that.
Yeah, I think I'm coming into that issue myself. Our cat washers were Peter Shankman and Jonathan Mitchell. That piece was produced by Sally Herships. You're listening to Weekend America.
Or if you live in Greensboro, North Carolina, you could just put the cat outside today. Good chance of showers today with a high of 78. For more weather, here's Week in America's John Moe.
Cloudy and 85 in Coney Island, New York, where they're having fun and making up new mythical creatures. The Mermaid Parade has mermaids, sure, but also mer babies and mer animals. There's also live music, food, and burlesque dancers who hopefully won't be at all mer. Quick question, would a creature that's all fish be called a mermer? Aliens are invading Wisconsin and citizens are uniting to fight them. Honestly, it's not War of the Worlds, and I'm no Orson Welles, but Fond du Lac holds a workshop on battling invasive alien plants and animals, like garlic mustard and gypsy moths, that thunderstorms and 78 can't defeat. Also, the gypsy moths fly in spaceships and have laser weapons, so look out. Hey, I backed way off the microphone to tell you the National Hollerin' Contest is this weekend in Spivey's Corner, North Carolina. There's divisions for overall, teens, ladies, and kids, although a kids' hollering contest is a little redundant. Thunder and 85 at the event, sponsored by the American Throat Lozenge and Earplug Association. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
The longer you live, the less you'll like movies. Down with those summer blockbusters, coming up on Weekend America.
Weekend America is supported by Gather.com, where people can stay in touch with who they know and what they love. You can discover unsigned musicians, discuss books, share pictures, and keep up with the world. People are talking. Gather.com. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert. Mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Online at Calvert.com.
Thanks for sharing your weekend with us. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. With the summer here, I just can't wait for all the summer movies to come out. I'm looking forward to one that's called Brick Lane. It's not a blockbuster. It's like one of those independent films, and it's about a woman who travels from Bangladesh to London for an arranged marriage. It's getting a ton of buzz.
I like the documentaries. I know Bill Maher is going to poke at religion with Religulous and try to actually get laughs, and I want to see if he can pull it off.
Well, not everyone is going to be looking forward to that summer lineup of blockbuster movies like Weekend America's John Moe. He's definitely going to be avoiding some of the summer's biggest movies.
I used to be a huge fan of both M. Night Shyamalan and Mike Myers. I loved stuff like The Sixth Sense, a movie Shyamalan directed, because I never see twist endings coming. Even in Scooby-Doo, I'm always like, that was the amusement park owner dressed as the Phantom? What? Likewise, I loved Myers. The opening dance number in the first Austin Powers, genius. But since those movies were released, life has happened to me, and now I can't go. In 2002, my daughter was born with dwarfism, and since then, I can't stand anything that mocks little people. And little people get mocked a lot. Vern Troyer is a dwarf and an actor in The Love Guru. In a trailer for the film, Myers' character literally objectifies Troyer's, pretending he's an Oscar statuette.
I'd like to thank the Academy. Wow. These things are heavy.
Little people put up with so much staring and pointing and discrimination, and then here's Mike Myers encouraging audiences to laugh at a little person because he's little. It's about as funny as a racist joke. Mike Myers is a bigot. Then there's M. Night Shyamalan's new movie, The Happening. It's about these mysterious suicides that start happening all over the country. Hundreds, thousands of suicides. Or so I'm told. I can't see it. Last April, I lost my brother Rick to suicide, and it wasn't a plot device in a suspenseful thriller. It was real. After Rick died, I realized how prevalent suicide was in entertainment. On TV dramas like House, Law and Order, Desperate Housewives, 16 different episodes of Diagnosis Murder. By the end of the hour, of course, everything's back to normal. In real life, in my reality, nothing will ever be normal again. On September 11th, 2001, Cammie Carter was working as a school teacher.
I was in my classroom in the Bronx, New York, and one of my best friends who I taught with there came into my classroom and said a plane's hit the World Trade Centers, and I kind of looked at her like she was crazy.
With school dismissed, Cammie returned to her apartment in Lower Manhattan.
This, like, all I remember about that time was just this horrid, like, smell of burning and burning buildings, burning. It was just awful.
Now she avoids any movies or TV related to 9/11 or terrorism in general.
One, it's really hard to watch the 9/11 stuff having lived through it. And two, I think that it reduces things down into a really simple, you know, question and answer type thing. And that's not what terrorism is. I think it's much more complicated than that.
The big reason I can't watch most portrayals of suicide is that it makes it seem so simple. It doesn't even faintly resemble what I've gone through or what I know about the issue. Likewise, I've met lots of little people since my daughter was born, and they're nothing like the weirdos depicted on screen.
You've got your Randy dwarf, you've got your angry dwarf, and you've got your drunk dwarf. And in the fantastical world, you've got the gnome, the elf, the alien, and that might cover, oh, and the leprechaun. Can't forget the leprechaun.
Mark Povinelli is an L.A.-based actor who tries to choose scripts carefully.
I typically get a script, and I see at what point does my character bite one of the other characters in the leg?
Mark says a lifetime of dealing with people's screwed-up reading of dwarfism has given him empathy for other minority groups and other actors, both as a colleague and as an audience member.
When I see misogyny, when I see homophobia, when I see racism in a show, even if it's supposed to be funny, it still rubs me the wrong way because I know that somebody has had to take a role that they probably thought was going to be honorable and turns out to be demeaning.
But it's a free country. In a studio somewhere, something that mocks overweight people or gay people or little people is being made right now. That won't stop. I know to steer clear of The Happening, but suicide will come up in some other movie or show written by some knucklehead who's never been around it. Someone will say something horrible about little people. It will happen. Meanwhile, we're all getting older, and events keep piling up. Birth, death, disease, amazing things, horrible and wonderful, that you could have never expected. And if it hasn't happened to you yet, it will. And your entertainment options narrow. Entire genres tossed out the window. And it's a hassle, because damn, you really used to like Mike Myers, and you wish you could again, because he was so funny before you hated him. But I think there are hidden blessings. If a movie exploits suicide or terrorism or portrays people with physical differences in a cruel way, there's a good chance it's just a bad movie, and you're better off avoiding it. I mean, look at the reviews for The Love Guru and The Happening. And if you're bothered by something on screen because it seems false, at least you now have an understanding of what's actually true. I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
Des, you and I have been talking about this subject this week and how sometimes it's not the movie's fault. The movie could be fine and you still can't bear to watch it. I lost a loved one to cancer several years ago, and movies were ruined for me for a while, good and bad movies. You can't go to the theater without terminal illness popping up. And I felt like I didn't want to forget my friend, but I did kind of want to get to the point where I could enjoy all those movies again.
Yeah, maybe that's a sign of healing, is when you can go back into the theater again. But maybe, as John pointed out, there's some things you shouldn't have to go back into the theater to be exposed to. And I'm a Black woman, and often there's things that people think are funny that it's just not funny. I think what John showed is that when you have a particular, when you walk in a particular set of shoes, you can see things in a different way. And the context is everything in a film, whether or not you can actually stand it or not. This is Weekend America.
And that's it for this hour of our program. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. You can download a free podcast of the entire program. Just go to weekendamerica.org. Hey, get out there and enjoy your weekend.
America is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
On the next Weekend America, the weekend is a good time to sweat it out.
We have these ceremonies to kind of like direct us.
Most folks are outside or working out, but for others, the sweat is spiritual.
You know, not to give up. It's okay to make a mistake and pick yourself up and move forward.
Indian ceremonial sweats inside one of the nation's toughest prisons. Join us for the next Weekend America.